The Pali word that we translate as happiness, sukha, actually has a very wide range of meanings. Everything from physical pleasure to well-being, bliss, ease, the whole gamut of all kinds of physical well-being and mental well-being. And sometimes happy seems to be the right translation, and sometimes it seems a little bit airheaded. Years back when we were first translating the chants here, I had an opportunity to go to a meeting where there were some nuns and monks from England. Over there they translate the passage, Ahang Sukhitoho, may I abide in well-being, which a friend of mine called Benedictine Pali. And one of the nuns was curious to find out how we translate it, and so I said, may I be happy? And she started laughing so hard she almost fell out of her chair. I guess the idea being that the simple wish for happiness is kind of airheaded. So if you have that feeling around the word happiness, remember sukha covers a lot of other things as well. And the Buddha himself said that another word for happiness is acts of merit. Now, merit is another one of those words we have trouble with, but what he's saying is that the happiness is in the action of doing something good. He lists three kinds of meritorious actions. There's generosity, there's virtue, and there's meditation. And those cover pretty much all the goodness in the world. The acts that give meaning to our lives come under those. Generosity means not only giving things, but also giving your time, giving your energy, giving help in all kinds of ways. It's in the act of giving that a lot of us find meaning in our lives. The time we give, the love we give to others, the care and concern. The act itself is a form of happiness, a form of sukha. The same with virtue. This has more to do with refraining from things where you could harm other people, or you could do something that was for your advantage, or that would take something away from someone else, and you don't do it. You have a sense that your worth as a person is much more important than whatever little gain you might get. And that's another area where we can find a lot of meaning in our lives. And then there's meditation. The Pali word here is bhavana, which means to develop, developing good qualities in mind. We primarily think of it in terms of developing mindfulness and alertness and other good qualities as we sit here and do formal meditation, but it applies to all areas where you see that your mind needs to train itself in noble qualities, in your thoughts and your words and your deeds. So when we say, may I be happy, may all living beings be happy, it's not that we're hoping for them to sit around and just have nice sights, sounds, smells, tastes, tactile sensations. Basically what it means is we hope that they do good, because that's where the happiness lies. Sometimes you do run into descriptions of the Buddha's teachings on happiness that sound pretty hedonistic. In fact, years back I was going to give a talk on the Buddhist take, or a Buddhist take, on the pursuit of happiness. And the afternoon before I gave the talk, I happened to meet with my old Christian ethics professor from college. And he asked me what I was going to say that night, and for a sake I decided to boil it down into one sentence, which is that the pursuit of happiness doesn't need to be hedonistic. And he said, well, I wish I had the time and opportunity to come and hear that. Although it's not simply about gathering up pleasures. Sometimes you hear mindfulness sold as a way of enjoying your pleasures more. The more mindful you are, this is when they practice eating raisins as a mindfulness practice, that you find there's a lot more flavor to the raisin when you savor it slowly. There's a lot more pleasure in the experience of drinking tea when you sip it slowly. Enjoy the warmth of the cup in your hand and all that other stuff. There was a psychology professor writing about positive psychology, and he was pointing out the fact that various approaches to pleasure and happiness in life, the lowest is trying to enjoy sensual pleasures. And all he knew about Buddhism was the Raisin Mindfulness School. And so he's trying to write about Buddhism in a respectful way, but he couldn't help but place Buddhism at the very lowest end of the various approaches to happiness in the world. This is what happens when you try to sell Buddhism in a way that you think is going to appeal to people. Teaching that, you know, if you practice mindfulness, you can consume your pleasures of life or squeeze a lot more happiness out of the consuming of your pleasures of life. So there is that story about Buddhism going around out there, but it's not what the Buddha taught. As I said, the happiness lies in the actions. When you do something skillful, you do something noble, that's where the real happiness lies. Both because there's a sense of well-being as you do the thing, you're realizing what you're doing is not harming anybody, and in the sense that it's going to produce happiness down the line, both for yourself and for other people. In this sense, the Buddha wants you to take that pursuit of happiness seriously. You would think that people would stop and think about how they're trying to be happy. And this may be one of the reasons that happiness has a bad press in some areas, because a lot of what people do when they're being happy is to block out a lot of life, so they can just focus on what they like. Pretend that other things are not going on. The Buddha wants us to be very clear-sighted about our happiness, all the implications. If you want happiness that's true, he said, you have to develop qualities of wisdom, compassion, and purity. These are all noble qualities in the mind. Without them, there is no true happiness. Wisdom starts by seeing that whether it's going to be pleasure or pain, happiness or sadness, comes from your actions. Not just a matter of things floating by. And you've got to realize that you have to be very careful about what you do and say and think, because some things lead to short-term happiness and then long-term pain. Now, other things may be difficult in the doing, but they lead to long-term happiness. Seeing that and being able to talk yourself into doing the things that will lead to long-term happiness, regardless of whether they're easy or not, that's a real function of wisdom. As for compassion, you have to realize that if your happiness depends on other people's suffering, it's not going to last. It's not going to be true happiness. So you have to take their needs and into account. As for purity, you look at your actions and see, do they really fall in line with your values? Your desire to be compassionate, your desire to be wise. You don't go just on good intentions. The Buddha makes the distinction. There's good intentions and there are skillful intentions. Good intentions, you may mean well, but you can end up causing a lot of harm, because you're not really looking carefully at what you're doing or the results of your actions. Skillful intentions are the ones that look carefully and actually do lead to happiness. And to be skillful like this, you've got to keep checking your actions again and again and again to see what results you're actually getting, to make sure that you are acting on your best intentions and your best understanding of what's going to happen as a result. And then keeping in mind also there are things that you may not know. You have to learn from your actions too. All of that the Buddha identifies as the quality of purity. So there are good noble qualities you can develop in the mind, and it's in the developing of those noble qualities that true happiness lies. True well-being, or however else you want to translate the word sukha. So as we meditate, we're here partly because of the sense of ease and well-being comes as you get the mind to settle down. But we use that as a tool. To gain greater insight into the mind, and to strengthen our generosity, strengthen our virtue, strengthen all the good qualities in the mind that need to be developed. The pleasure of the meditation is happy in its doing, but it's also a tool for an even greater happiness. And it's what gives meaning to our lives, the fact that the mind is developed. There are a lot of things that we try to accomplish in life that depend on outside situations, projects we'd like to do, and sometimes we actually do accomplish them, and then someone comes along and erases that. You look at the tide of history, and things go back and forth and back and forth, and if your sense of accomplishment or meaning lies in the sense that you've made a permanent change in the world, it's going to be disappointed. I remember listening to a lawyer who was talking about how when he started out his career, things seemed to be heading to greater and greater freedom and greater goodness. And then the tide turned. He saw all his accomplishments just being frittered away by one court case after another. So if you're looking for meaning in those terms, the world is a pretty cruel place. But if you look in terms of the good qualities you develop in the mind, they don't have to depend on the world outside. And the actions you do that are skillful, that are meritorious, that are meaningful, these are things that give real meaning to life. The qualities of virtue, generosity, and all the other things that the Buddha describes as inner treasures or inner perfections. Those are what real happiness means.